Good afternoon, everyone. I was privileged in my lifetime to lead a hospital in the Philippines for almost 50 years and traveled to more than 80 countries in the past 30 years, working for World Vision and Food for the Hungry. And what I learned in those years, I'd like to share some of the things, nuggets, with you today. I was surprised and encouraged and delighted that the theme of this conference is the public health imperative. And it reminds me that in the 80s, I actually did a 3-year study of hospital involvement in community health. And I had more than 500 respondents from 103 countries, and I have a 100-page book published by the International Hospital Federation that they have marketed for more than 10 years. So what I want to do now is to say I have no relationship to disclose, and my focus is patient-centered management and social responsibility in a developing country. You know, I heard one sentence that changed my life. This person from Geneva said in a hospital meeting in the Philippines that there is a new definition of a hospital. A hospital that's worthy of its name is one that reaches out to the community that it serves and does something about the health needs over there, not only to the people who go inside its walls. And so I was so inspired that I organized an outreach division in our small hospital then, and my life was never the same after that. So here's the Philippines. It's at the western edge of the Pacific between China and Indonesia. And I want to share with you what I have come to learn are the key issues faced by developing country hospitals who serve today most of the people in the world. The developed countries serve only a minority. So they have untrained managers. The doctor is still king. They have, of course, shortages, financial and manpower. And they keep needing to upgrade. There's a lot of competition, and there's really no participation or minimal participation in community health. But the bright side is we spend less with labor, construction costs are less, fewer legal suits, emergency rooms are not crowded, and there's a great variety of specialties at lower cost in the bigger cities. So my key point today is that even the poorest countries have their share of wealthy people. So if your hospital wants to do well, become sustainable, it must attract not only the poor, but also the rich. And I will show you, I will share some ideas today and how we did it in the Philippines. The key is innovation, of course, reduce costs, improve quality, and improve service. So now I will share some of the practical and down-to-earth ideas that we are actually doing in our hospital in the Philippines. You know, you cannot afford to make your hospital super-duper immediately, but you can afford to make it serve well. And Rotary says, he profits most who serves best. So the example of Lorma, that's how it is now, compared to 50 years ago when it was a small 25-bed hospital. It's in northern Philippines. We do have our inexpensive sunsets, but they're also as beautiful. We do have our outriggers that can be beautiful. We have our version of the American GI jeepney that can load 18 passengers in a few minutes while it's running from the back. And we have our share of laid-back law and order. So this is the hospital now. It's private. The results of our innovations, you know, the blue and the left this year. And each year, you see it's going up. For the past 7 years, the census keeps going up. Somehow we seem to be attracting the people. Dialysis is a problem. Diabetes is a problem, like in the US. So we have a sheet of paper, a patient survey feedback form. Every patient that comes to our hospital is given the sheet. And what makes the people come to our hospital? They listed three main reasons: services, facilities, and doctors. And here is a, from those sheets, overall impression in 2007, well, only 1% were only fair, not that 99% were satisfied. But just this year, the 50% excellent became 67%. So we must be doing something good. So let's see what we are doing. So 50 years ago, 30 beds, 30 staff, my father and mother as the Dr. Koppel. But they already had their innovations then. It was small, but it was successful. And their number one policy was to honor God in everything. Patients are treated even if they cannot pay. And that's the miracle of our hospital, because either because of that or in spite of that, our hospital keeps growing, even if patients are treated if they cannot pay. Personalized service. My mother would make rounds in the morning. Small hospital. What do you want for lunch and dinner? So that's what they would get for lunch and dinner. So we became known as the hospital with service, personalized service. Families can watch operations from the gallery. And my father wrote a self-help book, What to Do When You're Sick. So even then, the public health imperative was already felt. In the next 50 years where I was involved, we continue to honor God in everything we do. Patients are treated even if they cannot pay. We cannot give the meal anymore that they requested. So at the 148 beds. But we can give them a smile. We made the smile an institutional policy. Even if you're not feeling well, you must smile when you talk to a patient or watcher. And people talk about it now. 45 years later, people still talk about it. You cannot get away from fine medical work. And management has to be learned, has to be implemented. It cannot just be this or that. It has to be a complete, comprehensive management expertise. And when I heard that speech about what is the role of a hospital today, my wife said after 10 years of anesthesiology, I'm tired of anesthesia. Let me be the one to lead our outreach program. And she trained 300 village health workers, and that was the biggest hospital-based community health program in the country at that time. So today, we are ISO certified at the highest level, and expenses are supported by income, expansion supported by bank loans. What do we do now? We continue to honor God in everything we do. The patient, not the doctor, is the center of our attention. Emergency room patients are not denied care. And professional management with continuous improvement is our key management practice. And we're fortunate to have specialists, and we have a partner imaging corporation. We have a college. The college and the hospital are doing well financially, but the past 10 years, the college was doing more, earning more money. So we were putting the money where it was needed. And we continue to support that outreach program is now a foundation for community development. So as I said, in spite of or because of it, our hospital continues to expand. And we have learned that service excellence really should come from the heart. You cannot fake service excellence. So it's management, therefore, team spirit, employee satisfaction. And one thing that's good in the Philippines today, we actually have training companies that specialize in service excellence. Restaurants, hotels, hospitals are getting training in service excellence.
Can I have some water?
Number two, the patient is the center of our attention. And we continue with the Loma Smile, emphasis on service excellence, caring staff, concierge services, patient satisfaction surveys, every patient is surveyed in training and service excellence. So we have, the Loma Smile is what we are famous for. And here is a key part of our service. A patient calls and somebody answers within 7 seconds. And if you do that from the nurse station, you cannot do that. But we do it from the 24-hour information desk. So they have all kinds of gizmos to... Because when the patient calls, it's not only the nurse that's needed. Could be a doctor, could be a light bulb, could be anything. So the intercom operator gets the right person to go. So that frees our nurses to do what they're supposed to do, nursing. In San Francisco, some years ago, a group of patients started this plane tree concept. Those of you, you probably know about it, but if you don't, it's the emphasis on a healing environment, meaning your hospital should not only be a place for healing, your hospital environment should be by itself a healing place. So nurturing mind, body, and spirit. And so beauty, architecture, interior design, natural light, plants, that's really worth, if you're interested in improving patient care in either, in any setting, look at the plane tree concept. So we have made our hospital like a hotel with ambience. A former president was complaining about the large bill. Somebody said, "Sir, it's the ambience." And he said, "Who ordered the ambience?" One thing I learned when I was a resident in surgery, my partner in urology was always going home with gifts every day. So I said, "Andy, why are you going home with all these gifts every day?" And he said, "I have a secret. I learned it. Ever since I started visiting patients twice a day, they keep giving me gifts, and I did not have any. So I started visiting patients twice a day, and lo and behold, I was getting those gifts too." So in our hospital, I said, "Hey, doctors, you visit your patients twice a day." So that's what they do. So it's like a hotel, and you know, the wealthy people, they demand a good-looking place. And here are our patients' comments by department. They are given to the respective departments concerned every month. And then number three, we are fortunate. You know that the Philippines, in the whole world, the Philippines has only 80 million people. But in the whole world, the Philippines is number three in the number of people, Filipinos working abroad. The Philippines is also number three in the amount of money being sent back to the country. Number of people working abroad, China's number one, India's number two, Philippines is number three. Money sent home, Mexico's number one, India's number two, Philippines is number three. Interesting. So we have lots of specialists, and these are our medical department heads, specialists on call. We really have to have that ambience, even if nobody ordered it. Corporate services, this is a very popular department, because we have a very popular website. We get inquiries from different countries, reserving a room or asking about something. And this is our outreach program now, the Mobile X-Ray. It caters to companies and homes. You know, this is a portable digital X-ray cassette. So that X-ray van can take the X-rays of 300 patients in one day without using any film. It's all recorded in this cassette. And when it reaches the hospital, they just download it to the hard drive. So that's an innovation that we have. Here is something I learned from a New Zealand hospital. You know, the stretcher from the ward in many hospitals, it goes all the way inside the operating room. And you know what those wheels can contain from the floor of the patient's room. So here, the stretcher from the patient's room does not go inside the OR. There is this crossover bridge, and the one on the right is the stretcher in the OR only. And here is another innovation. You know, the family first, patient first. So without changing, the surgeon can go on this side and talk to the family on the other side, even while he's still in his scrub suit. So the family can know immediately what was found. You know, patient first means really patient first. While waiting for the MRI to be finished, we entertain them with some nice views in the ceiling. So that's carrying it as far as we can. We are very fortunate to be the first computerized hospital in the Philippines, small hospital in the province, because our business manager decided to play around with the apple trees. That was how many years ago? 40 years ago. And it became eventually a completely computerized hospital with Filipino programmers. We have this new department for wellness. They have more than 12 videos of different kinds for what can people do at home to have a healthier lifestyle, no matter what they have. Here's something that is can be done by any hospital. Our marketing director invites people from the villages to come once a month, and our specialists talk about some important topic on how they could be healthier at home. So professional management, value of visiting other hospitals. If you want to learn how a hospital can be managed from a very poor performance to the best in the U.S. in 5 years, learn about Access, the Baptist Hospital in Pensacola, Florida. That is the best example of a hospital management style that you can apply here or any country in the world. We did things like, oh, you know, the data from the patient is recorded in a notebook, and then the nurse's station is put onto the chart again, so that's double work. So we split the chart, so the data is recorded at the bedside, and it's not recorded anymore after that. And one thing I learned years ago was, if we equip our hospital with maintenance equipment, we could do almost anything. Like our maintenance people piped in the oxygen and suction. You know, that suction on your right, that serves the whole hospital. And it's just two pumps and a big vacuum thing, and it's made 2 minutes, okay. So, in closing, so these are our maintenance people training. So we have the college and the medical center, Scanning Corporation, and the foundation. So that's our, what we have. We have a China connection, where Chinese hospital executives come to our hospital. 5 groups have come so far. And also, they have asked me to, and Ken Heckman, to do training in hospital management in China. So the last part, the last 20 seconds, is that I wrote a book. It's available on the internet. It's a summary of all those things that I've learned in the past 45 years. It's called Innovative Hospital Management, Success with Limited Resources. And that's how it looks, available from Amazon. It's the only book in English that focuses on hospital management in developing countries. So thank you very much. Three sentences. Number one, the rich come to us too. So it's like Robin Hood. Number two, we have to manage it in a way that we are able to do it with much fewer resources. Innovate. And number three, we actually are very profitable. That's why we cannot expand exponentially. We can expand continuously. And so the college and the hospital, if you want to have a funding source, put up a college and manage your hospital well. It cannot be just the leg or the trunk or the tail of an elephant. Management has to be complete. It cannot just be one part. And that's all I can say. I've been doing hospital management training for 5 years now in different countries, Asia, Africa, Latin America. And I did executive management development workshops for 12 years in 12 countries before that. So I've learned to, yes sir, I've learned to answer your question. You know, every country, I've been to 80 of them, all the poor countries have the rich people. If they know about your hospital, that it's worth coming to because their life is at stake, they'll come and they'll pay. So it's excellence in management and service and good financial management. There is no shortcut. They get from everybody, whoever, the hospital and the college, we fund the complete administrative expense. But they raise the staff will raise funds for projects. So it's practically self-funded with donations. But administration, we do it. So as I said, it's hard to understand. We believe that it's because we honor God first that He has helped us financially also. That's what we believe. And res ipsa locutor, the evidence speaks for itself. Yes, sir. Not the wards, only the suites, but we have lots of them. 24-hour internet.
That's what I mean. Like the hall is double ward.
General Ward, no. But you know the reputation. 3 months ago, we had this epidemic, dengue, and the census went up beyond our capacity, and patients were coming in. They were just flooding in. They were coming in, even if they're going to sit in a chair, they would come in. And our staff said, why? You are so uncomfortable. And they said, as long as we're here, we feel okay. So the reputation has sort of gone up through the years. Did not happen overnight, no.
It was all multiple choice, yeah, for the sake of collating it early, easily. I'll comment also a little bit on the financial thing. In one of the previous sessions on innovations in resource-poor settings, someone made the comment that building volume makes a difference, and that certainly was our experience in Bahrain. I think I mentioned I started with just 9 doctors and we ended up with about 70 doctors and 12 dentists on staff. And we had to do some construction in there, and that's where the community support was exemplary, raising $2.5 million in that community in a 5-year period was quite an experience. Again, it was one of those things that I didn't study in medical school, but we were able to do that for capital development. But in terms of our operations, we just would not acquire technology until we literally could pay for it. I was not willing in our situation to do much in the way of taking bank loans. And so what we did was we focused on the quality of service. We started with old buildings, but we fixed them up to make them look good. And between having a pleasing physical environment with all its limitations, I mean, our spaces were relatively cramped. The main clinic, the waiting area was basically wide corridors. I mean, it wasn't ideal, but we just found that you do your best fixing up that physical environment, and you do your best to improve quality and to communicate the message that you are improving your quality out to the community. I mean, again, things you don't learn in medical school, marketing. But those simple measures got the ball rolling. When I arrived at this hospital in Bahrain, it didn't even have 24-hour presence of a physician in-house. And I brought that to an end. I needed to hire a couple of extra people. I wrote myself into the schedule, and we started 24-hour coverage in-house. We advertised, and then a mega dust storm came up from the empty quarter and blanketed our island. And pretty much all the asthmatics came out of the woodwork, and business began to climb. So, you know, simple measures can increase your volumes. And as you increase your volumes, just the movement of cash through the hospital will make a difference to your ability to then acquire, little by little, better technology, better physical facilities. And as you do that, you can maybe engage community support for some very significant donations to enable capital development.
One final question.
Sure. Well, I can speak for Bahrain, and for Bahrain, the 6 GCC countries generally, they're pretty similar. And we've seen a movement in the 22 years that I was out there from a fairly low level and almost informal regulation to Now Bahrain is actually going to set up an independent body to do its regulation. In the meantime, the Ministry of Health, which is also the largest provider, talk about conflict of interest, was doing the regulation. It unfortunately in recent years became quite opaque and erratic and slow, which was a real frustration for those of us in the private sector. Hopefully the new regime will overcome that. Accreditation was not demanded, and actually we achieved accreditation in 2006 and were the first ones on the island to get international accreditation. And I had recommended to the Ministry of Health that that would be by far and away the best way to go instead of trying to reinvent the wheel locally. But I think they're going to do a bit of both under this new scheme. But yes, the government has a regulatory role, although by and large, it's been fairly much limited to some basic quality measures and the credentialing of staff.
To me, going by these presentations, it seems like the difference is not obvious to me. Like what makes the Christian hospital unique in the sense that they have different kinds of needs?
I think we need to distinguish faith-based organizations and secular organizations that provide healthcare services. Why do we need to do that? If we go back to the history of Christian hospitals or mission hospitals, you'll find out that actually what motivated these people to come to provide health services to people is actually their religious beliefs and orientation. I'm glad that, Rufi talked a lot about honoring God. In all sincerity, I think really, if you look deep down, that should differentiate Christian hospitals from secular hospitals. It's a little bit, it may sound a little bit contentious, you may not agree with it, but.
No, it's not contentious.
Yeah,
it's
circumstances.
Philosophy that you are willing to follow and deliver services based on the philosophy, that's perfectly acceptable and that is fine. That's how a lot of different organizations operate. What I'm trying to understand is what makes these needs different from, when you talk about the needs of Christian hospitals, how are they different from any other hospital, and how does being a Christian hospital help or hinder your, for example, strategic planning, business planning, or any other needs that you have towards every hospital has those needs.
Okay.
Their own ways of addressing it. What I'm trying to understand is how does faith here differentiates you from another hospital that is not faith-based?
Well, if we still go back to where I started from, that essentially, the question you asked really threw me a little bit, and I now looked back and said, come to think of it, why are Christian hospitals different? The Christian hospitals are different because the philosophy behind them are different from that of a secular hospital. However, the same needs that the secular hospitals have, Christian hospitals have them. They do. Or challenges of management, challenges of equipment, challenges of funding, and all that. However, the philosophy behind it often seems, it's not so tangible, but it's there behind it. It drives whatever they do. And at the end of the day, you find that it does make a difference in the way service is delivered. And oftentimes, when Christian hospitals tend to deviate, as we noticed in the presentation made earlier, we found out that, in fact, the 2000 study really, to a large extent, identified that most of the founding principles behind Christian hospitals over time seem to have eroded a lot. And to a large extent, most of the challenges they were having could be traced also to that. So I guess to an extent, that is one key factor. Thank you.
I think one difference is compassion. There is a role for compassion in healing. Second reason is prayer. It has been shown by scientific studies in the U.S. that prayer does help. And third, the motivation for service. But my concluding statement is, personally, I have not found the public health model of health administration to be useful in my work. If you read about the award-winning Baptist Pensacola Hospital and what they did, you will not find any public health model there. You will find business and industry model. I'll not disagree with you, okay? I'm just saying that I can speak for myself, though, that in my own management work, and I went through 1 year in a school of public health in the U.S., and I've learned much more from business and industry than from public health publications. So I'm sorry to say that, but that's the real thing from me.
Trying to synthesize those remarks with my own experience, what I would say is that the motivation behind the hospital is very much community focused if it's being done correctly. Following the example of Jesus Christ in terms of his healing, his compassion for the poor, and just the biblical mandate that the poor, the orphan, the widow, the alien, the fatherless are the ones that we're supposed to be focused on is a constant reminder of where we should be directing our services and how we should be directing them. And so it comes back to us as one of those markers for evaluating the job that we're doing. And what we've found is that, yes, many of the problems we face are really no different than the problems institutions in these environments face, no matter what their basis, whether they're for-profits or secular nonprofits or government organizations. Good management is something that every organization needs. But, for instance, the difference, like with our hospital, was that unlike our colleagues who had some very fine private hospitals in Bahrain, I was happy to be associated with them, and we sometimes took advantage of one another's services and things like that because all of us were relatively small. But we were the only one that had serious outreach programs into the community doing preventive care and chronic disease management. Some of the examples we set were being picked up by the others, to their credit, but we were the ones who pioneered in that area.
Just contribution to the question that you asked, I talk from a very limited experience. The faith-based organizations, practically like most of the mission hospitals, extensions, linear organizations. that do not have problems with bureaucracy that you find public hospitals and so on. They are more responsive, and because they are more attached to the communities, they can actually relate more to the needs of the people than they tend to have public
hospitals. I totally agree with that. In my experience, a religious faith-based hospitals